Hey team, welcome to the Student Paramedic Podcast Pediatric Mini-Series with Dr. Andy Tagg. Hey team, welcome back to the Pediatric Mini Series. This is episode 3 and we are going to be talking about trauma in children with Andy. Thanks Andy for jumping on yet again. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to discuss this with us, and I feel like we've done a lot so far. We've spoken about the assessment of pediatrics using the pediatric assessment triangle. We've gone through the ABCs of the wheezing child. And I'm really looking forward to today's episode being trauma. We see quite a bit of trauma in our job, and I guess less so in children, or maybe more so depending on what area people work in. But I'd love to start off asking you about sort of the prevalence of pediatric trauma.
So I think one way to think about trauma in kids is to think of it as on a U-shaped distribution. So there's a higher incidence in really young kids, that's sort of less than 1 year of age. It kind of dips down to the preschool and school age kids. And as they kids move into adulthood and sort of teenage, and that's when they're taking sort of much more risky behavior, then the incidence of trauma goes up. And you think, oh, what's he talking about, you know, trauma in small young kids? And unfortunately, a percentage of the trauma we see is inflicted by parents and carers. That's a non-accidental injury that we need to be aware of. A lot of those young kids as well are more likely to be affected by falls. So falling from a change table, falling from a sofa. Those are the sort of low-level falls that we think about in young kids, those under 1 year of age. As kids get older, in that sort of age between sort of 1 and 5 bracket, I'd say about a third of the causes of trauma are due to transport-related injuries. And often those kids are passengers in motor vehicle accidents rather than anything else. Unfortunately, some children, as they're getting to be toddlers and a bit more risky, will try to run into the road or walk behind cars as they're reversing. And that, again, is a cause of trauma that we might see. School kids, unfortunately, get injured as they cycle to school or they scoot. And as their kids get older and they start trying new things out, like quad bikes and e-scooters, they're more likely to get injured through those. And then, unfortunately, we've got that sort of dreaded problem of interpersonal violence that we're seeing a lot more of these days. So certainly in the UK, there's an obviously increased incidence of stabbings in inner city life. And it's something that we're seeing over here in Australia as well.
That's quite an interesting way to think about it in terms of that U-shape. I've not quite thought of that before and not come across it, so it's quite interesting. And I guess from what you were saying there is a very wide range of different types of trauma that can occur. I guess from there, what kinds of mechanism of injury or injury patterns would we be looking at in these sorts of trauma presentations? And how do they differ in children compared to adults?
So most of the traumas that occur in kids are sort of blunt force. Those force from a low height or from a high height, they're going to cause blunt force trauma, often long bone injuries and head injuries rather than anything else. Motor vehicle accidents in kids, again, tend to form long bone injuries, chest, abdomen and pelvis injuries. And then obviously, unfortunately, when kids get involved in assaults or in gang attacks, then they affect any part of their body. And those are much more likely to be sort of sharp force trauma, or you know, essentially stabbings and bleeding into internal cavities. So if we think about breaking it down into blunt force, and these kids are going to often have long bone injuries rather than anything else, or sharp, very localized injuries that occur in sort of those attacks. I think one of the challenges is that children are not the same as adults, as we've spoken about, you know, over the course of this podcast. And the child's response to trauma is very, very different from an adult. Kids are still growing and their bones are relatively plastic. And so it takes a lot of force to deform them and cause injury. It also means that if a child's involved in a motor vehicle accident, although they may not appear to have any broken bones in their pelvis or their chest, can still cause large amounts of damage to the underlying tissues, to the abdominal organs, you know, the bowel, and to the lungs. And I think it's really incumbent on us then when we go to the scene and see a kid that looks pretty well to think what else is going on. I've certainly seen children involved in motor vehicle accidents that almost look as if a car's run over them with a tire mark across their belly and their chest. And the bones are fine and they look like they're okay. And only on further assessment and with time do you realize that something has seriously happened to these children.
That's a really important point in terms of thinking about what more is there, what am I missing, particularly not just for pediatrics, I guess, but just in our general practice as well. In terms of their physiology, we know that children are different to adults. How does their differences in physiology change the way we should assess or look out for particular injuries or how they may compensate when they are injured?
I think the key difference is that initial response to hemorrhage in kids. They start off becoming tachycardic rather than anything else, and they can maintain that tachycardia for a long period of time before they start to drop their blood pressure. We know in adults, if we see a hypotensive tachycardic adult, that, you know, there's obviously a huge risk of some sort of hemorrhage going on. But I would be concerned for that tachycardic child. And the challenge really is that a lot of things cause tachycardia in kids, and certainly fear and apprehension and pain are the most common causes, and they can mask that underlying injury. Often children can lose a large proportion of their circulating volume before they become hypotensive. So relying on hypotension as a sign of shock is going to lead to trouble. I would be much more inclined to be cautious in that sort of tachycardic child with an appropriate mechanism of injury and assume that there's blood loss going on, because those kids can certainly respond well with an appropriate tachycardia. And if despite appropriate analgesia and anxiolysis, they're still remaining tachycardic, I'd be concerned there's an occult injury going on.
That makes a lot of sense. Going back to our pediatric assessment triangle that we spoke about in the first episode, how does any of our approach with that assessment triangle change when it comes to a traumatic presentation?
That's a great question, Alex. And I think that main thing is, just like any trauma, is when we're thinking about appearances, not to be blinded by the most obvious injury. It's very easy to think, oh, this child is covered in blood, they're screaming and yelling, and think, you know, I mean, I've certainly known my kids do the same when they've cut their fingernails too short. So it's really, you have to do a real careful top-to-toe assessment. When I'm seeing a child that's been involved in trauma, I'll try and take a systematic approach. I'll do the standard ABC approach, thinking about what my most immediate life threats are, and then try and do a top-to-toe assessment once I've obviously got some analgesia on board, if I can get it on board them. And I think, like a lot of, you know, dealing with trauma in adults and in kids, it's a case of going back and reassessing, starting again and looking to see what you might have missed along the way, because, you know, children often may present in sense of trauma, and, you know, the most horrific obvious thing in front of you may not be the cause of their distress or their problem. And so I guess a great example of that, the kid that's been involved in a motor vehicle accident, and often it's the noise, it's the potential explosion of the airbags, it's the cut glass and the cuts on the fingers that are distressing them. And we haven't really had a chance then, without undressing them or having a look, looking for those seatbelt signs, looking for something that may be going on in the chest or the belly. And so it's a case where you've basically got to go and say, okay, let's try and do a systematic approach, start with our airway, our breathing, our circulation, and then make sure if we get the opportunity to have a good look for any occult injuries, and making sure that child's got, obviously, their dignity kept intact and they kept warm along the way.
It's interesting because that systematic approach comes into everything we do. So it's nice to hear that, again, it doesn't change. It's just about adapting your systematic approach to the pediatric patient that you have in front of you. From here, we may be having a patient who is all the way from 1 week old all the way through to, you know, an early teenager and above. When we say pediatric trauma or trauma in kids, how do we adapt our assessment and our management to these differing age groups, because like we said, it could change between different age levels and we might have multiple kids in particular traumatic cases that we go to. And a disclaimer, obviously any medical management of particular injuries or medications and things like that will be down to local policy and procedure and guidelines.
I think it's tricky if you've not had a lot of experience seeing very small children involved in motor vehicle accidents, for example, or involved in trauma. And I think I would lump it into really that small, less than 1 year old age group as a cohort, and thinking essentially you're kind of like a vet when you go to see them. They can't tell you what's going on. You can't see what's happening. And often these children may have hidden injuries, as I suggest. And because, you know, babies and young infants are essentially all giant heads on sticks, it doesn't take a lot of trauma in a head region, for instance, to cause a significant amount of blood loss. And so if I'm seeing a child that's under 1 year old that's been involved in a trauma, and often that's maybe a fall from a high chair or a push chair, fall from the change table, then I'm going to make sure I just do a quick look and then check my pediatric assessment triangle. And really that appearance is the key often for me. It's, are they interacting appropriately? Are they crying appropriately? Are they consolable? Are they looking around? Because I'm thinking, okay, is there a neurological problem here? Because it's much more likely, because children are like I said, top heavy, that it's going to be a neurological problem rather than a circulation or a breathing problem. I think you're very much guided by the mechanism of injury, just like in any trauma case. I think as those children get older, then you can get a bit more of a history from the child and the carer, hopefully, that's been with them. And you get a better sense of what's going on. And you can then take a focused history and examination. Really, I think more than anything else, you're dealing with anxiety and stress. You know, an adult can generally rationalize and understand what's happened to them if they've been involved in a motor vehicle accident, or even if they've been assaulted, they know what's happened. They can understand why it hurts. But children and young people often can't, and their distress is often out of proportion to any injuries occurred. So the mainstay of sort of any sort of investigation and history taking is actually getting down and trying to get that child on board, trying to remain calm yourself, because that calm is contagious, and taking your time with them, explaining what's going on. Think what it's like if you're on a backboard or in spinal immobilization and people are around you cutting off your clothes, talking about you, and you can't see what's going on. As adults, we kind of get to know what's happening. But if you're 5 years old and you're strapped to a board, and strangers are doing things to you, it's an incredibly scary experience. And no wonder you're going to lash out. You're not going to interact. You know, you're going to scream. You're going to cry. You're going to want your mum or dad. And so what I think it's really important to do, that first thing when you're approaching these children, is to make sure they can see you and they know who you are. And so they can recognize that kind voice. And then you can move out of their field of view and they'll know that there's someone there with them, because they'll be able to focus on your voice.
Yeah, that's really important. I really like that. That's a really nice way of really summing up sort of how we're going to approach these pediatric patients, particularly in a scary, traumatic sort of environment. I really like that. In regards to management, obviously, like we mentioned, in terms of medication and things like that, all going to come down to sort of local protocol and things like that. But have you got any sort of advice and approach to management, other than obviously we've assessed and we've taken that kind approach and gotten on their level, but in terms of management, is there any kind of key differences with a pediatric in regards to how we're going to sort of sort this out in a trauma environment?
I think one of the key differences is that most problems in children are dealt with when they get to hospital in a non-operative manner. We use conservative management. Whereas, you know, an adult with a pelvic fracture or an abdominal injury will often go to the operating theatre. A child will probably won't. They'll often have conservative management. We'll just watch and wait and see. And so actually we like to take our time with kids to see what happens over the course of their their time both pre-hospital and in hospital. We're not going to rush to give them intravenous fluids. We're not going to rush to give them blood. We're going to wait and assess and see what they need. Because like you say, kids are incredibly resilient with an amazing physiology that allows them to bounce back after most hardships and problems. So they really, the key difference is getting appropriate analgesia on board. And one of the problems with kids is we're often afraid to give strong analgesia to children because of fear that it's going to perhaps mask something. And, you know, I think we'll talk about this in another episode about how, you know, analgesia for kids is so important and often forgotten about.
Absolutely. And I think that also comes down to as well, like what we'll talk about in the next episode on analgesia, but it also comes down to sort of what options you've got to give and are they appropriate for children and yeah, all sorts of types of things. So it's going to be quite an interesting episode to pick your brain on that one as well. At the beginning of the episode, you mentioned non-accidental injuries. These can be quite disturbing and quite challenging to deal with. But how do we manage a child who has gone through a trauma-related incident that was part of a non-accidental injury?
It can be really hard to see a child that's been injured and think that perhaps the parent or carer or guardian has injured this child. And your automatic reaction is to become defensive and want to look after this kid. And sometimes we get angry towards the parents who say, how could they have let this happen? How could they have done this to the child? But actually, I think it's worth going in and just dealing with the child in front of you and putting the parent or the carer to one side. What we need to do is focus on what's happening straight in front of us now and dealing with that injured child. And I guess one of the concerns we have is, let's say a child's got a head injury and you're not sure if it's been caused by a parent, a babysitter, a grandparent, a step parent. The fundamental assumption we're going to have is that we need to look after this child first and foremost, and it is not your job in the pre-hospital environment to be judge and jury as to what has happened. That's our job in hospital, is to get more information to find out exactly what's been going on. Your job in the pre-hospital environment is to get that child to a place of safety. And that place of safety may be in the back of the ambulance and then onto the pediatric emergency department. In the pediatric emergency department, we often have a relatively low index of suspicion for non-accidental injury because we don't want to miss anything. And so what I would do often have is a conversation with parents, say, hey, I'm not sure how this injury has happened, and there are some inconsistencies with the story that we've been given. And so we're going to need to do some more tests. It's my legal obligation to report this injury. And that's not something that I like doing, but it's something I have to do. And I would much rather report 100 injuries that have purely accidents than to miss, you know, a significant event. And most parents then are pretty on board with that sort of conversation. I think the challenge you have in that pre-hospital setting is if you go in with a judging sort of state of mind, it's going to impact on your relationship with the parent or carer in the back of the ambulance and with the child in front of you. And so I would try and go in with an open mind. And obviously, if there's something that you think is completely, you know, out of order or remiss, then obviously make sure you let the doctors and nurses know when you hand over when you get to the pediatric emergency department. Because, you know, you've been the eyes and ears, you've been at the scene. And so it may well be that you see something at the scene that looks dodgy, then it's nice to let us know. And then we can deal with the problem.
Absolutely. And in terms of that as well, like what kind of common injuries are we looking out for in that sort of sense?
So I think, you know, one of the most common ones are head injuries. And so that's, you know, children that have been dropped and fallen out of bed, rolled out of bed, dropped off, changed tables. That's one of the common things we think about. Shaken babies, think about, you know, and that's, you know, the classic one where kids may get bilateral rib fractures, petechial hemorrhages, the eyes, brain into ventricular hemorrhages because they've been shaken. We see twisting injuries. So kids then have got broken arms, broken legs because the parents have grabbed them and twisted them. And then there's other things you think about, like burns, you know, that kid that's been put in the bath that's been just too hot, and they've got burns to their feet because, you know, they've been dunked in the water rather than, you know, allowed the parents to take in the temperature of the water beforehand.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess those are going to be very challenging jobs to go to as well, which we're going to speak about on a future episode. In regards to trauma, are we missing anything in this little bite-sized episode today, Andy?
I think it's important to recognise that, just like when you're dealing with adult trauma, it can be very confronting going to any scene of any trauma, and then that can have lingering effects on you as a pre-hospital provider. And if that's the case, then to talk to someone afterwards. Talk to your line manager, speak to your employee assistance program, speak to a counsellor, because these cases can have a profound impact on you and your ability to continue to work. And just like they do with us in hospital.
Yeah, that's a really important point. Thank you for bringing that up, Andy. Now, that is today's episode on pediatric trauma. So we are going to be releasing the next episode of this pediatric mini-series in a week's time. Please let us know how you find these episodes so far through our social media and via email. And let us know if there's anything you would like covered so that we're making sure that we're giving you information and content that is right for you.